Welcome in. I am just so glad to have you here with us today for this custom tailored deep dive. We have something genuinely fascinating on the table for you today.
We really do. It's a fun one.
You know how sometimes we get our hands on like public press releases or maybe a white paper that's been floating around the internet for months? Well, today is entirely different.
Yeah, completely different.
Today, our entire focus is on a highly confidential internal document. And the date on this document, it is exactly today, March 10th, 2026.
It really is a rare opportunity to look at something this fresh.
Yeah.
And this restricted, we are looking at a pre-production pilot phase blueprint straight from the Deuterocular Infrastructure Division and their Tri-Fi Wireless Partnership.
Right.
And the target audience for this document tells you exactly the kind of frontier we are dealing up here. They are targeting RV park owners, ecotourism operators, remote mining camps, agribusiness landowners.
All the off-grid folks.
Exactly. And a demographic they specifically refer to in the document as sovereign entrepreneurs.
Right, people who want to be completely off the grid but still want a revenue stream. And the document itself is titled The WISP in a Box Sovereign Node. WISP, of course, standing for Wireless Internet Service Provider.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission for this deep dive is to completely uncover how this specific product is attempting to take off-grid internet access, which, you know, has traditionally been a massive, painful cost center for remote businesses.
Oh, absolutely. A black hole for money.
Right. And they want to turn it into a literal autonomous business in a box. We're talking about taking a patch of dirt in the absolute middle of nowhere and turning it into a profit center. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Let's start with the core identity of the product itself. They call it the Sovereign WISP Kit. SKU is Rio's Kit WISP. It's presented as this hybrid format, a combination of a physical hardware bundle and an over-the-air toll booth software provisioning system.
That hybrid nature is the key to understanding the entire proposition here, because this isn't just a heavy-duty router you buy off a shelf at a standard electronics store.
Definitely not.
It is a fully integrated ecosystem designed to act as a turnkey micro ISP. What that means in practical terms is that it handles automated captive portal billing, something called SD-WAN bonding, and even IoT, so Internet of Things, backhaul.
Which is huge.
It is. It allows these remote landowners to seamlessly sell Wi-Fi and IoT connections to transient users, people just passing through or staying temporarily. And it automatically splits the profits without the owner lifting a finger once it's actually running.
But getting it running isn't exactly pocket change.
No, it is not.
The upfront financial breakdown for you to get this set up is, frankly, substantial. The MSRP for the Deuterocular hardware bundle itself is $1,749.
And that's just the baseline.
Exactly. That's just piece one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a massive partner dependency here. You have to pair it with a Starlink flat high performance kit, which costs about $2,500 via Tri-Wireless. And on top of that hardware cost, there is a Starlink priority data plan that will run you around $250 a month at the Tri-Fi Wireless wholesale rate. So if I'm a campsite owner, I'm looking at almost $4,500 just to turn the lights on, plus a hefty monthly bill.
Yeah.
That feels incredibly steep for a remote property.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that upfront cost might seem high for a standard consumer, but it is an absolute bargain for a utility provider. And that's what you're becoming here.
Oh, interesting framing.
Previously, setting up an ISP, even a micro one for a single RV park, required specialized networking knowledge, trenching fiber optic cables, thousands of dollars in enterprise routing gear.
And usually hiring an IT guy, right?
Exactly. A dedicated IT engineer just to manage the complex billing software. This kit condenses all of that friction. It takes the raw high-speed connectivity of a Starlink enterprise dish and layers a fully automated, ruggedized business model over the top of it. You are essentially buying the infrastructure to become the local monopoly utility provider in a remote area for less than the cost of a used golf cart.
I love that framing, the local monopoly utility provider. Okay, so we have this powerful, somewhat expensive hardware sitting out in a field. Let's actually unbox it, virtually speaking, and see what you're getting for that money. What is the actual brain of this operation?
At the absolute center is a device called the Sovereign Sentry Pro. Internal SKU is Rio's S Pro. This is the piece of hardware acting as the SD-WAN router, the host for the captive portal, and the local radio server. It is doing an immense amount of heavy lifting.
Wait, let's pause right there. You mentioned SD-WAN bonding and a radio server. Can we translate that for the listener just to make sure we're all on the same page?
Absolutely. Think of SD-WAN bonding like having multiple water pipes flowing into one massive tank. It ensures the water pressure never drops, even if one pipe gets clogged. It essentially manages multiple internet sources simultaneously.
Got it. And the radio server.
Think of that as your digital bouncer. It stands at the door of your network with a clipboard, checking the credentials and the wallet of every single device trying to connect, deciding who gets in and who gets kicked out.
That is a great analogy.
And to run that bouncer efficiently, the Sentry Pro houses an i3 N305 processor. For an edge routing device, that is a substantial amount of compute power.
Why does it need that much power, though? Just to check passwords.
It needs that power to perform deep packet inspection, analyzing the actual data traffic as it flows through. And it has to do this without creating a bottleneck for a Starlink connection that's pulling in speeds of over 220 megabits per second. It has to be incredibly fast and ruthlessly precise.
So that's the brain. But how do you actually get this internet to the camper parked, say, 5 acres away at the edge of your property?
Right, the distribution.
Yeah, that brings us to the next piece of hardware, the mesh beacons. You get two of them in the bundle. SUU is Ryo's EXT01. And these aren't your typical indoor Wi-Fi extenders that you plug into a wall outlet.
No, these are serious industrial components.
They are IP67 rated, which means they are fully weatherized, dustproof, and waterproof outdoor access points. And they aren't just broadcasting standard Wi-Fi 6 for the campers. They're also broadcasting a 915 megahertz LoRaWAN network specifically for low-power IoT devices.
The physical reach of these beacons is staggering, honestly. The document explicitly notes that if you mount these two mesh beacons at an elevation of 15 feet with a clear line of sight, you are blanketing 5 to 10 acres with high-speed Wi-Fi.
That's a massive campground.
It is.
Yeah.
But even more impressive is that LoRaWAN coverage. Because it's a low-bandwidth radio frequency designed for smart devices, that 915 megahertz signal can reach up to 3 miles in every direction. You are covering a massive physical footprint with connectivity from just two mounted poles.
But anyone who has ever used satellite internet knows the fatal flaw: the weather.
Oh, yeah, rain fade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A heavy rainstorm rolls in, and suddenly your connection drops. If you're running a business, you can't just tell your paying customers, "Hey, sorry, wait for the clouds to part." That is where the third piece of hardware comes in: the Nomad Link.
The Nomad Link. Internal designation IOS NL01. This is arguably the most crucial piece of the puzzle for maintaining a reliable revenue stream. It is an industrial batteryless LTE failover modem.
How does it fit into the setup?
In the network topology, the setup places Starlink as the absolute priority, tier one. But if Starlink experiences severe rain fade, which the system defines as triggering the moment there is over 15% packet loss, the Nomad Link LTE failover seamlessly kicks in as tier two.
Like a hybrid car switching from electric to gas the second the battery dies.
Exactly.
And what's fascinating is that the document specifically notes this failover isn't necessarily so someone can keep streaming Netflix during a storm. It's to keep the payment gateways online.
Precisely. It shifts the primary goal of the network from simply providing internet to maintaining revenue flow. If the payment gateway drops, your ability to sell data stops. This LTE bridge ensures that even in a torrential downpour, when the Starlink dish is struggling to see the satellites, the transaction system remains completely bulletproof. Your transient users, who are stuck inside their RVs because of the rain, can still buy internet access.
And because this is designed for the sovereign entrepreneur, it has to work completely off the grid. The kit includes power over Ethernet plus, or PoE plus, injectors, and a DC step down.
Which is brilliant engineering for this market.
It really is. It
Yeah.
basically means you can plug these beacons and the Nomad Link directly into a solar panel microgrid or a battery bank. It regulates the voltage so you don't fry the electronics. It is entirely tailored to a wilderness reality.
It assumes you don't have a standard AC wall outlet anywhere near this thing.
Exactly. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's talk about how the system actually extracts money from a camper. Because hardware is great, but it doesn't pay the bills. The core software managing all this is called the OpenClaw Tollbooth image.
I love that name, Tollbooth. Very descriptive.
It runs natively inside the Sentry's brain, leveraging a HeathSense virtual machine. And the blueprint outlines two distinct operational modes for monetization. Let's start with mode A, the transient consumer.
This is the microtransaction model, built around a strict $5 per gigabyte charge.
Okay, let's stop right there. $5 for a single gigabyte. That seems insanely steep. I mean, I pay my cell provider for unlimited data. Won't a camper just look at that price, laugh, and refuse to pay?
In a city, absolutely, they would laugh.
Oh, yeah.
But remember the context of the sovereign off-grid entrepreneur. This hardware is deployed in areas where cellular service is non-existent. It's an oasis in a connectivity desert.
Okay, fair point.
When you are deep in a national park and you suddenly need to download an offline map, check your bank account, or send an urgent email to your boss, $5 for a gigabyte isn't highway robbery. It's a lifeline. It's the equivalent of expensive airport Wi-Fi, but in the middle of a forest.
That makes perfect sense. The desperation premium. So picture this for you, the listener. A camper rolls into this remote spot, they look at their phone, and a Wi-Fi network pops up. Let's say the public name is Sovereign Connect 5DGB. They click it. Immediately, the software intercepts their connection, just like at a hotel, and redirects them to a locally hosted captive portal. It asks them for $5, which they can pay right there via Stripe, or even Lightning Network if they are crypto users.
What's fascinating here is the sheer precision of the underlying mechanics once that payment clears. The tollbooth agent registers the unique ME address of the user's phone or laptop.
The hardware identifier.
Right. It then tells our digital bouncer, the local radio server, to allocate exactly 1,024 megabytes of data, one precise gigabyte. As that user browses, the system is constantly obsessively metering that specific allocation.
Now, when they hit the limit,
the enforcement is absolute. The millisecond that 1 GB is consumed, the firewall instantly revokes the session. There is no grace period. There is no, oh, let me just finish loading this page. It cuts the connection and redirects them straight back to the top-up page to buy another gigabyte.
It is ruthless.
Yeah.
But let's do the math on that. If you have an RV park with 50 spots and just 20 people a day buy a single gigabyte, that's $100 a day, $3,000 a month. Suddenly, that heavy upfront cost is paying for itself very quickly.
Very quickly.
But the monetization doesn't stop at just selling Wi-Fi to tourists. Let's look at Mode B, machine-to-machine, or IoT backhaul. Let's say you own an agribusiness. You have a neighboring farm that wants to deploy smart soil moisture sensors across their fields to optimize their watering. But they don't have internet out there.
Right.
You can essentially lease out your network to their sensors.
The workflow for this is incredibly frictionless. The node operator simply logs into their sovereign dashboard. They take the specific device identifiers from the neighbor's soil sensors, the LoRa device EUIs, and they whitelist them.
Just types them in.
Yeah. The business logic dictates that the neighbor is billed a flat $10 a month subscription for this access. The mesh beacon catches the telemetry data from those sensors, and remember, it can reach up to 3 miles away, and routes it securely over the Starlink backhaul straight to the cloud.
Why wouldn't the neighbor just buy their own Starlink, though?
Because paying $2,500 for hardware and $250 a month just to transmit a few kilobytes of soil data makes no financial sense. It would ruin their margins. Paying you $10 a month is a massive win for them. And for you, it's entirely passive income.
It's brilliant. But of course, DeReticular isn't just providing this software out of the goodness of their hearts. There is a revenue split.
Always is.
The document clearly states that DeReticular takes a 50% data margin split. Now, half of my revenue seems like a massive concession. If I own the land and I bought the hardware, why am I giving them half?
Because the alternative is drowning in administrative overhead. In exchange for that 50%, DeReticular is carrying a massive burden. They're the ones managing the underlying Stripe and crypto payment gateways.
Oh, that makes sense.
They handle all the credit card chargebacks, which, in a transient consumer market where people might feel buyer's remorse after buying $5 of internet, can be significant. And crucially, they handle the tax reporting. As a landowner, you are completely freed from the back office accounting nightmare of processing thousands of $5 microtransactions.
Okay. So I don't have to hire an accountant just to track Wi-Fi passes. My only job as the operator is to just monitor everything. And they facilitate that via a localized dashboard they call the Lacutus Ledger.
A very sci-fi name.
Very. It allows the operator to audit all of those microtransactions cryptographically. You literally just sit back and watch the ledger update. So how do you actually get this thing? The fulfillment workflow is a multi-phase operation, and it really highlights how tight the partnership between DeReticular and TriFi Wireless is. And again, this speaks to removing friction.
The trigger is simply a customer purchasing the kit via the DeReticular WooCommerce storefront. The back end immediately fires an API webhook over to TriFi Wireless. TriFi Wireless then contacts the customer directly to finalize the Starlink business contract and ships that flat high-performance dish straight to them. But meanwhile, the physical fulfillment of the particular bundle is happening at a facility called Node 3 Workshop.
Right. And this isn't just a warehouse tossing boxes into a shipping crate. The technicians actually unbox the Sentry Pro and pre-flash the virtual machine with what they call the YSSP golden image.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the part I love because I am not a network engineer. They hard code the physical ports on the device. Port 1 is strictly for your Starlink. Port 2 is for the Nomad LTE failover. And ports 3 and 4 are the LAN connections for the mesh beacons.
It is a masterclass in frictionless design. They have taken enterprise-grade network topology and reduced it to a color-by-numbers physical setup. You don't need to know how to configure a firewall. When the boxes arrive at your campsite, you plug the Starlink dish into port 1. You plug the mesh beacons into ports 3 and 4.
Just follow the numbers.
Then, you insert a physical sovereign key into the Sentry device. This acts as a secure authentication token to give you access to the local dashboard. You run a quick setup wizard to link your bank account for payouts, and the node goes live. It instantly begins broadcasting your public Wi-Fi name, and your business is officially open.
So what does this all mean for the real-world application? Because anytime you are dealing with public internet access, things can and absolutely will go wrong. The document has an extensive risk register that addresses some major friction points.
Let's hear them.
Let's start with the most obvious one. What if one camper connects, pays their $5, and then decides to stream a 4K movie, effectively crashing the network and hogging all the bandwidth from the other campers?
This is a classic problem for any shared network. Their mitigation strategy is strict shaping. Remember that deep packet inspection the Sentry Pro processor is handling? The toll booth software uses it to enforce a hard limit on every single connected device. No matter what a user is trying to do, they are hard capped at 15 megabits per second for downloads and 2 megabits per second for uploads.
That keeps things manageable?
Exactly. This strict quality of service preserves the overarching Starlink bandwidth pool, ensuring that hundreds of users can coexist on the network without degrading the experience for anyone else.
Okay, but what about the giant elephant in the room? If you look at standard Starlink residential terms of service, reselling your internet connection is a massive violation that will get your dish permanently banned. So how are they getting around that?
They aren't getting around it. They are fundamentally structurally integrated with a different commercial tier of service. The document explicitly notes that the software integration is strictly locked to the Tri-Fi Wireless Enterprise API.
Ah, so it talks directly to the business backend.
Yes. In fact, there is an API bridge within the core software that constantly syncs the total data consumption with the enterprise billing backend. This ensures total compliance with Starlink's acceptable use policy for commercial entities. The software is so tightly locked down that it will literally refuse to boot up if you try to plug it into a standard, off-the-shelf residential Starlink dish.
Wow. It just won't even turn on. It forces you to play by the enterprise rules. They also have a mitigation for people trying to steal data. Say someone uses up their gigabyte and then tries to spoof their device's MSC address, basically putting on a fake digital mustache, to trick the portal into giving them more free data.
People will definitely try that.
To combat this, the system uses a tool called the Sovereign Audit. It constantly watches for suspicious behavior. If it sees rapid MSC cycling, someone changing their address over and over, it triggers an automatic, localized block list. It just shuts that device out entirely.
Security is paramount here, and not just from data theft, but from real-world legal liability. When you step up to act as an ISP, you face the very real risk of users doing illegal things on your network. The document outlines their legal compliance shields, specifically CLIA and DMCA Safe Harbor.
Let's translate those. Because the last thing an RV park owner needs is a lawsuit or a visit from the FBI because some transient user illegally downloaded a pirated movie over their newly installed network.
Exactly. CLIA stands for the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act. It means the system is inherently wired to comply with legal wiretap requests if law enforcement comes knocking with a warrant. You, as the operator, don't have to figure out how to comply. The software does it natively.
And the DMCA Safe Harbor protects the operator from copyright infringement claims. How does it actually shield the operator technically?
In two specific ways. First, the network uses something called Layer 2 Client Isolation. In plain English, think of it like putting every connected user into their own soundproof, bulletproof glass box. Camper A cannot see, communicate with, or hack Camper B's tablet over your network.
That's reassuring.
It prevents the local spread of malware and shields the operator from local hacking liabilities. Second, the tollbooth software logs all device and IP address associations for exactly 90 days.
Okay, so there's a paper trail.
Right. If a Hollywood studio sends a DMCA copyright notice claiming someone downloaded a movie on a specific Tuesday, the operator has the exact cryptographic log to prove which transient user was responsible. This ensures the operator themselves is not held legally liable.
It is a phenomenal liability shield. Mm-hmm. And to wrap a bow on all these protections, the physical hardware itself is backed by a one-year limited warranty on the Sentry Pro, the Beacons, and the Nomad Link. Just to be clear, the Starlink hardware warranty is handled separately by SpaceX and Trifa Wireless. Plus, the system is designed to evolve. They deploy over-the-air software updates directly to the firewall and the tollbooth agent from the Dereticular Registry. You buy the hardware once, and the security features just keep silently updating in the background.
It is a highly robust, completely self-contained ecosystem. The sheer amount of engineering that has gone into mitigating the physical, digital, and legal risks of running a micro ISP for an everyday person is truly comprehensive.
It really is. Bringing this deep dive to a close, the magnitude of what the Sovereign WSP kit represents is just mind-blowing. What we are looking at in this confidential blueprint is the complete democratization of the IST model. They have managed to take enterprise-grade billing, incredibly strict bandwidth enforcement, and off-grid failover mechanics, and pack them into a single ruggedized color-by-numbers package.
It's remarkable.
It is an incredible reality of the tech landscape we're seeing in these sources today. It takes the hardest parts of telecom and turns them into an appliance that transforms a patch of remote dirt into a fully autonomous, revenue-generating node.
This raises an important question. If localized, fully frictionless micro-ISPs like the Sovereign Node become the standard for off-grid communities and remote businesses, how might this fundamentally shift the balance of power?
Oh, that's a good question.
We are moving from a world dominated by massive, centralized national telecom conglomerates to a decentralized grid of individual landowners, all acting as their own sovereign network nodes. What happens to the telecom monopolies when thousands of small businesses become their own local utilities?
Oh, that is a deeply fascinating thought to chew on. You, the listener, we highly encourage you to mull that over, look at the empty spaces on a map, and imagine a silent, automated economy humming in the background. Thank you so much for joining us on this incredibly exclusive deep dive today. We will catch you next time.